Well, I think we are expecting to see more women being promoted, but you can't move a woman from a very low rank in the government all the way to foreign secretary. It's one of the great offices of state, so you need someone with a great deal of experience, and Philip Hammond does answer that.
He's sort of a troubleshooter, I guess. Well, in terms of Hague's sort of tenure as foreign secretary, do we think of it as a success? Has he made a good fist of it?
I don't think there's a huge Hague legacy as Foreign Secretary. It did a lot of good for him. He shook off the image that you saw there as a sort of 16-year-old nerd in the baseball cap at Notting Hill Carnival, etc., and did become statesmanlike in his own persona. But I don't think people can point to a Hague doctrine or some huge achievement as Foreign Secretary. He did arrive with a vision, which was this kind of mercantilist Britain as the great trading nation, and there's even been some controversy over that with British embassies around the world having receptions for the Queen's birthday being sponsored, etc., but the planes flying off filled with businessmen. That was the vision, and then it was really knocked off course by the Arab Spring and by the war in Libya.
I mean, he got into a bit of trouble with that, of course. We'll remember the whole situation with Libya, where he didn't manage to rescue the British forces, I think he had in, and there was
there was a sort of chaotic start. I think that was then overcome by events and by the appearance, anyway, of military success. But what I'm told behind the scenes is that he was, Michael Gove, who was very gung ho for that, and really, self-avowed neoconservative. William Hague had much more adopted the kind of Foreign Office realpolitik view of the world, and that after Libya, it was Michael Gove who was in those sort of inner councils more than William Hague, and people had been saying for the last few months, Tory colleagues had been saying he's sort of checked out, gone a bit native as a Foreign Office.
Not an ideologue, William Hague. I mean, he is he's a strong conservative, and he's got a grassroots link, which I think David Cameron will miss. But he'll have it for the next 9 months. He'll miss it afterwards. But he's not an ideologue. There's a lot strong streak of pragmatism about him. And actually, Philip Hammond's quite an interesting appointment, if that is who becomes Foreign Secretary, because he is, I think, probably more Eurosceptic than William Hague, possibly less reliable. He's certainly less reliably an ally of the Chancellor and the Prime Minister. He's more his own person than William Hague, who was much part of the team. So he's less reliable how he'll come out. So it is an interesting, I think, introduction to any negotiations to take place in Europe if they win.
Isabel, we're going to see right and left sort of coming in here. What do you think? I mean, Allegra is mentioning the European Court of Human Rights, and if you look at the swathe of men who are all going out, they were all advocates.
Yes, and I suppose moving William Hague, there was a suspicion that he had gone native at the Foreign Office. And I bumped into a senior Eurosceptic earlier in Parliament when rumours that Owen Paterson had been sacked were circulating. And he was absolutely furious, saying, we don't have one of us in the highest ranks of government
anymore.
And
one of us means what?
Someone who, in Eurosceptics' view, is robust and hasn't gone native, isn't taking sort of Whitehall Mandarin's line on Europe. If you listen to William Hague's speeches on Europe, particularly at the Conservative Party conferences, his view of Europe was no longer minimalist. He talked about using Europe to tackle climate change, which many politicians may agree with, but a lot of Eurosceptic Conservatives certainly didn't.
And you've got to remember what a shift that was. He was elected leader in 1997 as the Eurosceptic candidate in Europe, but not run by Europe. That was his phrase. And then in the end, he is seen as being the man who's the Foreign Office man and is not the Eurosceptic enough. It shows you something about how the Tory party have moved.
No, it's not quite right. Yes, that last sentence is correct. There has been a move among Eurosceptics. There are more Eurosceptics who are in favour of leaving. And William Hague's position never been that. He's been in favour of being in Europe but not run by
Europe. But it shows you that red meat position wasn't enough for today's Tory
party. I know we're running out of time. This awful phrase, pale, stale and male. There's been this whole sort of catalogue of the middle-aged man leaving. Is that...
It's generational. Look at the people who've left. They are the people who were worried that David Cameron was stepping over them to be leader. Lots of them supported David Davis for generational reasons, almost precisely because this reshuffle would happen one day. But also, at the end of the parliament, when you haven't reshuffled and you've got a five-year parliament, people are going to think, well, what am I going to do with the next 5 years? Like David Willetts, for example, has decided, if I don't want to be an MP for the next 5 years, then I can't stay in this reshuffle. So he's gone of his own volition, and that's I think that's happened to a few people, but it's been basically generational as well as anything else.
And are the young and are the female there? I don't know why I'm asking you. That's very unfair, but I just happened to catch your eye.
Well, there are lots of very impressive female Tory MPs, so Cameron's lucky in that respect. He knows he needs to promote women, but he can look at his backbenchers and his junior ministers and see lots of really talented prospects for promotion. One of the good things about some of the MPs he could be promoting, such as Priti Patel, is they're not just talented women. They're also robust Eurosceptic right-wingers. So if you're looking for someone to satisfy the Eurosceptics, you've got those on the backbenches as well.
I mean, that's the interesting thing, is that you'll get people who are hardcore Thatcherites and they're very hardcore
Eurosceptics. Liam Fox, we hear, is coming back in. Right?
Well, that will please the right who are unhappy about Owen Paterson going.
It might not please them as much as you think. Some of them are quite unhappy about him coming back.
Well, he brings a sort of taint, because he left under a big cloud and you're now going to reopen that can of worms, so that's awkward. But I was going to make this other point about diversity. It isn't just about gender. You have Sajid Javid there, you have Priti Patel there. This will be very helpful for a Conservative Party wants to say it's somehow in touch with Britain. Other people, of course, the left will say it's window dressing, but it helps.
Well, this is it. Do people notice? Do you think the voter actually notices when the cabinet
looks
different?
Just as you were saying that, of course not. I mean, most people don't know who the people are. They don't, therefore, care whether they move from one position to another. You know, I think the most important... It does matter, of course, the balance of women and men, for example, matter, and generational matters. But the most important thing is, you know, where will it leave the government? So, therefore, you have to analyse Philip Hammond's promotion, for example, in substantive terms. What difference will it actually make to policy? And I think there definitely will be a shift from William Hague.
Well, on that, I would mention the European Convention of Human Rights, which Allegra mentioned. You have people who would have been custodians of that, in the protectors of that, Dominic Grieve, Ken Clark, Damien Green, even people like that, they're now out, and you do wonder if that's preparing the ground for a manifesto promise to scrap Britain's involvement in the European Convention, scrap the Human Rights Act, and bring something else in its place.
Thank you all very much indeed. Thanks for coming in.